The Marshawn Jones trades by the Panthers might have been some of the greatest trades I've ever seen.
I mean, the whole Brandon Marchand thing is crazy because he even said it himself. He said, I should not be here.
There's two ways that you can interpret this. A, he doesn't want to fucking think about a contract right now because he still has a year left. He still has time. Or B, he doesn't know if he wants to stay in Edmonton or not. He doesn't know if this is the place where he can win a Stanley Cup. Welcome back to another episode from Checking From Behind. I'm your host, Zach, as always, joined by Preston. It's been a little while since we've actually done an episode in the middle of the week, but the Stanley Cup Finals are over. Unfortunately, there's going to be no actual meaningful hockey until the beginning of October for the next 4 months. However, though, we're getting into that time of the year where free agency and the draft starts to get underway, and then the complete dead part of the summer happens. First off, congrats to the Florida Panthers on repeating as Stanley Cup champions. They are your 2025 Stanley Cup champion. Sam Bennett wins the Conn Smythe. Not by a big margin, though. Only 8 points behind him was Brad Marchand. I thought Brad Marchand was going to win it. Sam Bennett, though, he led the entire league in playoff goals with 15. So kind of, I'd assume that's where the edge was. Sam Reinhart had 4 goals in the game-clinching game.
He tried to stat pad, man. He tried.
2 empty netters, but it doesn't matter. 4 goals is 4 goals on the stat sheet. We both picked the Oilers to win in the finals.
It's your fucking fault they lost. I told you this was going to happen.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to. I legitimately thought the Oilers were going to beat the Panthers. They didn't. You rode with the Oilers the entire time, though. So props to you.
You know what? They got me all the way to the final. I'll take that. You know, what a interesting playoffs we had this year. You know, congratulations to the Florida Panthers for going back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. It seems like this is so common now for teams just to go back-to-back. It's not easy. I think people forget that it's ridiculously hard. But, you know, in the last 10 years, we had 3 teams go back-to-back, which is kind of insane.
Before that, you just had the Red Wings, I think, went back-to-back. I don't think the Avalanche ever went back-to-back, did they?
Yeah. No, they didn't go back-to-back. They went a few years apart. New Jersey might have gone back-to-back. It was either 2 in a row or 2 over 3 years.
I'm gonna check that. No.
But regardless, you know, you had Pittsburgh go back-to-back. You had Tampa go back-to-back. And now you have Florida go back-to-back. And I think the Panthers have a really good chance to three-peat next year. They're not going anywhere.
Did you see the video of I really hope this is real because like I didn't check to see if it was AI generated. So I'm praying because AI is going all across social media for those of you guys that are unaware. But Barkov said reportedly that a three-peat was a possibility. Again, I'm going to get cooked if that was a video and it was completely AI generated.
I mean, that's believable because why wouldn't he believe they can three-peat? Yeah. They've been to 3 Stanley Cup finals in a row. And call me crazy, but I think they're finding a way to keep Sam Bennett and Aaron Ekblad.
I don't know how to think about that. I think there's you're going to keep 2 of 3 of Bennett, Ekblad, and Marchand. I think they're going to
keep Marchand stays. I think he's a really great fit for that team. I don't think they win the Stanley Cup without him because you can make a really great argument for Brad Marchand winning the MVP because, he scored 5 goals in the Stanley Cup final. Like, I think it was, game 5? The game 5 in Edmonton where he, like, just put the team on his back and split the defense like that to, you know, open the scoring. You know, Brad Marchand, I think, sticks around. I think Bennett will take less money to stay in Florida. Well, he'll know he'll be on a winning team for a long time. Ekblad's the only one I'm not sure of. I think they're going to find a way to keep Sam Bennett, though. I think he wants to be there, and I think they'll figure something out.
I think that Bennett's for sure going to stay. I know there's some report that media people have been speculating that Sam Bennett possibly would get thrown $10 million if he were to hit the open market, especially 15 goals in the playoffs, Conn Smythe winner, Stanley Cup champion. But if that were to happen, I don't think that a team that would be a fringe bubble team or a team that's rebuilding or retooling should throw money at Sam Bennett because his career high in points, I believe, is like 50 or something close to that range. And in the playoffs, he locks in. Like, that's the thing about some of these players like a Sam Bennett. They can coast in the regular season and play at their best, but they, in the playoffs, they turn it on to another level and they know what it takes to win. And I think Sam Bennett, the Panthers are going to give him $8 million to stay in Florida, maybe even $7 million. Maybe that's a thing where Florida's like, hey, let's run it back. Let's keep this thing going. Let's build a fucking dynasty. And they're like, here's $7 million for the next 7 years. Let's fucking do it. They get Brad Marchand on a 3x6. They get Aaron Ekblad on like a 6x8.5, for example.
They do have $19 million in free cap space. So they don't have a ton of money to work with, especially those the sign Bennett is going to cost a lot of money, and Aaron Ekblad's probably going to cost at least $7, $8 million a year. So it's not out of the question to bring all three back, but then they also have to address their depth. That's the one thing they did a really great job of last offseason. Is they were kind of in the same situation where they didn't have a ton of money to spend. They paid to keep, you know, Sam Reinhart, Carter Verhaeghe, you know, those guys around long term. Really smart team-friendly deals. You know, Reinhart and Verhaeghe are amazing players, and the Panthers don't win the Stanley Cup without them. And then they had really good depth pieces. Like, I thought Nate Schmidt was amazing for them all season long, especially in the playoffs. And then that fourth line they had, you know, Thomas Nosek was a big contributor to them as well. A little bit of an underrated player for them. Doesn't put a lot on the score sheet, but that fourth line was so good for the Panthers all playoff long. So, I mean, Bill Zito is good at finding these really good value depth guys.
Gadjevich also, shout out to him. Yes. He played a good part on the fourth line. And
he's under contract for one more year, so that's why I didn't mention
him. Okay, yeah. So I didn't realize you were mentioning just UFA and RFA guys, whatever. But yeah, you're correct. And the way that Bill Zito has built this team, I don't know where this narrative came from that the Panthers just build straight through the draft and that's how they built the team.
I think they have like three players on the team that they drafted.
Yeah, like they have built this primarily from being signed, or they have a few trades. The only players that they drafted were Barkov, Lundell, Samukevich. I really hope I pronounced that right. And Samukevich
and Aaron Ekblad. Yeah, those are the only four they've drafted. Yeah, the rest are all trades. Gustav Forsling was a waivers claim. Might be the best waiver claim ever. But I want to talk a little bit more about the other side of this, the Edmonton Oilers. So I'm not sure if you seen or heard any of the end of season pressers the players are going through. I'm talking specifically Connor McDavid, because man, it's interesting stuff he said. So first, let's hear what you think of it.
I'm going to read the quote out for the guys, by the way, for the viewers and audience. So Connor McDavid in the end of season presser goes, ultimately, I still need to do what's best for me and my family. That's who I need to take care of first. But of course, there's unfinished business here on his future with Edmonton. Going to take some time to regroup, talk to my agent a little bit, family, and make some decisions when the time comes. There's no rush. There's two ways that you can interpret this. A, he doesn't want to fucking think about a contract right now because he still has a year left, he still has time. Or B, he doesn't know if he wants to stay in Edmonton or not. He doesn't know if this is the place where he can win a Stanley Cup.
I think it means a couple of things. I think that was more so of a message to management saying, you got to get your shit together. We got to figure this out because, you know, we made it to the Stanley Cup final 2 years in a row. We lost both times and we played worse this time around. So we got worse from year to year. I know we went back to back. We have the same core pretty much that we had the last year and it didn't work again. Figure it out or I'm seriously going to consider leaving. I think that's what I got from that. I don't think he was like saying I'm going to leave. I think it was more of like a threat to management saying get your shit together.
Yeah, I don't know what to think of it because everybody's going to interpret it a different way. And I'm just of the essence of he just lost the Stanley Cup Finals, right? He doesn't know what to think of his contract situation. He wants to just take a breather.
Yeah, it's probably the last thing on his mind.
Yeah, like he doesn't have to worry about that for another week and a half, like until July 1st comes. Like maybe the Oilers have reached out to his agent already or whatever, but I don't know that.
Well, he doesn't even need to worry about it because you got a guy like with Connor McDavid, he's going to get paid whatever he wants. Mm-hmm. It's not like the team's not going to be interested where he's worried about like, oh, I hope they're going to give me what I want. Like McDavid's got nothing to worry about when it comes to contract wise. I think he really wants to give this offseason, put pressure on Oilers management to figure it out and address their depth better, because that was the downfall of the Edmonton Oilers in the Stanley Cup final was their depth wasn't showing up. They were double shifting McDavid and Draisaitl as much as they can. Pretty much as soon as they go down 1-0, you were seeing McDavid and Draisaitl playing on a line together. And they normally only did that when shit was falling apart. And then Matthias Ekholm was playing off an injury, and he looked like he wasn't 100% yet in game shape a lot of the playoffs. And then Bouchard, I thought, had a pretty brutal Stanley Cup final. That turnover he had in game six, not 100% his fault, not a great pass from Ekholm, but still he can't do that. And then Ekholm takes a horrible angle. I mean, Sam Reinhart made a great play on that goal, regardless of, you know, what the defenseman did, but still two bonehead decisions back to back. And then their bottom six didn't score at all. You know, you give Trent Frederick that 8-year contract extension, which, good for him. I don't know. I don't really know what to say about that. I think it'll be better for them with a full year. You know, he was coming off an injury. He only played one regular season game with a new team, you know, but he scored one goal in the playoffs. I didn't even know he had scored a goal in the playoffs, but he was a non-factor, I thought, in the Stanley Cup final. Same thing with, you know, Matthias Janmark and Henrik. You know, I knew the Oilers were cooked in Game 6 when they were double-shifting Jeff Skinner, because he was one of the better players, honestly, in Game 6, and he was up in and out of the lineup all playoffs long, all regular season long. And then, you know, Kasperi Kapanen, too, he'd either be amazing or he'd be awful. And, you know, they had a lot of great games with them. Evander Kane was also a non-factor in the Stanley Cup Finals. Some interesting stuff going on with him as well. There's that whole thing going around with him, you know, people theorizing that he got into a fight with, he tried to get into a fight at the end of Kachuk on purpose so he could get kicked out so he wouldn't have to do the handshake line, which I don't know, but I think he could have came back off the handshake line, but it's not a good look by him. And now the NHL is also investigating the Edmonton Oilers into whether they were circumnavigating the cap by stashing Evander Kane at LTIR when he necessarily wasn't hurt.
That's interesting. I heard that, but I was like,
yeah,
every team does
every
that,
team
right?
does it,
but
yeah.
But then I never really thought about it. I was like, now I'm just, maybe he wasn't hurt for like 3 weeks. Maybe he was completely healthy and couldn't come back.
I think it might have been a situation where I think he was legitimately hurt to start the year.
He was
recovering from surgery, yeah. Right? And I think he might have been ready to go. Because he played game one of the first round, right?
Yeah.
That was his first game of the season, so... Mm. Yeah, he might have been ready for like a few weeks beforehand. It was just a cap thing where like the Oilers were like, yeah, we can't play you right now. So you're still hurt, buddy. Ice it up.
You know what I'm intrigued for? What the Edmonton Oilers are going to do. They have $8 million in cap space, 8.4 to be exact.
Yeah, not a lot.
You have Evan Bouchard, who's an RFA, who you are going to want to lock him up long-term. Apparently, his asking price is $10 to $11 million.
I mean, he's getting at least all of their salary cap that they have left, so they're going to have to make some moves to figure some stuff out. I mean, they have four UFAs forward-wise. John Klingberg is the only UFA defenseman. They have Calvin Pickard and Stuart Skinner, you know, ready to go next year. I don't really know how you can make a big shakeup on this team unless you're moving money out. And they can't move the money out because they rely so much on those top forwards that they can't afford to get rid of any of them. I could see maybe shipping a guy like Matthias Ekholm out. He's going to the last year of his contract, 35 years old, $6 million cap hit. Teams will be interested in him still, even for 1 year, half retained if Oilers have to do that to move him. But that's one player I could see them potentially targeting to move out of there. You know, just that big of a cap hit at that age. You do what you got to do.
I mean, I love Ekholm. He's been their second best defenseman. Arguably at points, their best defenseman. No shot at Bouchard, but that's just how it goes. But at 35 years old, making $6 million, again, even if you have retained, like you said, trade him after July 1st, you're at only $3 million. You free up another $3 million, you can get Bouchard signed, plus maybe throw another $2 million in, depending on
That's the Oilers' problem is, like, and how bad does it now look at, you know, letting Dylan Holloway and Broberg get signed as RFAs and get poached, and they didn't match. I get the money was tight for the match, but they made their decision. They'd rather roll with Victor Arvidsson and Jeff Skinner instead of those two young players who were both first-round picks in their draft. Who Dylan Holloway looks like a budding star in St. Louis. And then Philip Broberg is a good young defenseman, which the Oilers need right now really badly.
Yeah, and I felt like Broberg should have been easily matched. That was a guy where, outside of Bouchard, you don't have a ton of young talent. In fact, your blue line is one of the oldest in the league. Evan Bouchard is your only young talent. You also have Ty Emberson, who's 25 years old as well, but he's a third-pair guy, right? So a Philip Broberg, who played second-pair minutes at times in a pinch for you last year, he didn't look too bad in the playoffs, was a key component in why the defense was so good in the 2024 Cup runner-up run. And now you lose him. Now you lose Holloway as well. You don't match
him. They also trade away Ryan McLeod, who was amazing for the Sabres this year. You know, they moved on from these younger players that aren't necessarily on crazy contracts to sign old vets that disappear in the playoffs. I just don't really see a great future for this team. They'll probably make the playoffs next year just because McDavid and Draisaitl are so good. But unless they make some crazy trade, I think they're running the back next year pretty much the same core.
They don't
have enough cap space. Like, I don't know if you trade Bouchard's contract rights or because they can't afford to sign him right now. They simply cannot.
There's going to have to be a tough decision to be made here if you're the Oilers GM. You have to figure out your way around the cap, at least until the cap raises another $8 to $9 million after the season. This offseason is going to be tough, I'll tell you. This offseason is going to be tough. And then with the cap rising after next season as well, but guess what? McDavid's new contract, whatever the fuck he gets, is going to blow your team up even more. And this is the one flaw that I have with having a guy like McDavid and Draisaitl and Bouchard. You have your three guys right there, but when you can't afford to overpay guys like a Darnell Nurse, who's making 9.25 right now, and when he...
I love how we always find a way to bring up that contract.
Every time.
I mean, it's an awful contract. It's horrible.
It is awful. And unless he becomes out of nowhere, a top 20 defenseman in the league, which he's not going to be. No offense to him. He got his bag. Props to him. But
he wasn't that bad for them in the playoffs, but he's not worth $9.2 million a year.
And that's the issue with having guys like McDavid and Draisaitl and Bouchard. You can't overpay for guys because you think that they're worth X amount, but it's like, well, we can afford to give him $1 million, $1.5 million more. But, you know, you can't do that, especially if McDavid, if he gets $15 million or if he threatens to go on an open market, then all of a sudden now you're forced to throw however much money McDavid wants at you to keep the best player in the world on your team.
I mean, call me crazy, but I think the idea... Huh?
Oh, sorry. I was going to say their window's closed.
Oh, I was just going to mention, like, you know, you told me 2 years ago that McDavid would consider walking away from the Oilers. I call you insane. Mm-hmm. I think there's almost a 50% chance it happens because I don't see the Oilers really getting better next year. I mean, the rest of the Western Conference is starting to catch up to them. I mean, maybe the Dallas Stars will finally learn how to get over themselves in the third round of the playoffs. I expect LA to have learned lessons from this past season. You'd like to think. I mean, with their coach, who knows? But they're getting older. They don't have a really ton of great prospects. Like, Matthew Savoy is going to have to be a guy that makes the team next year. You know, he's a guy they brought in from Buffalo. He's the reason why they shipped out Ryan McLeod. And he couldn't crack the roster this year. And he's going to have to make the team next year. Like, no choice. He has to be on the team because they need a young player like that on an entry-level deal. Because they need the cap space. It's simple as that.
They need the... start having guys that are making $1 million are making $925,000 to start producing. And I'm glad you brought up Savoy because I wanted to bring him up too. He's a guy that has to make the roster next year and produce. He can't have an outstanding training camp in preseason. It's like, we might have a stud here, Buffalo. Fuck you. We got a 80-point guy right here. I'm mocking everybody, by the way, if you guys don't know. But he can't do that and then drop 30 points playing 14 minutes a night on the third line. Like, a 30-point season, don't get me wrong, for a 21-year-old, it's pretty solid. But the pressure that's going to be on Savoy next season, he's going to have to play 14, 15 minutes a night and put up 45, 50 points, maybe give you 17, 18, 19, 20 goals. Like, that's a lot of pressure to ask for a rookie in the NHL, don't you think? Like, I think that's a little bit too much on a guy like
him.
Oh,
no. I mean, that's the issue they're going to run into, though. Yeah, if Matt Savoy does make the team out of training camp, which I think he might have to, just because the way the roster is going to have to be made up, especially if they find a way to keep Evan Bouchard, because right now they do not have enough cap space to sign him. And if they do sign him, they don't have money to sign anybody else.
And if they
literally sign, nobody else.
And if they end up, let's say they sign Bouchard to $10 million, right? A, Savoy, again, has to make the roster. B, you have to figure out a way to fill out those last couple forward spots, because you have Jeff Skinner, Corey Perry, Connor Brown, and Kasperi Kapanen. All are UFAs. So you have to, I don't think they're going to bring, actually, Corey Perry could probably come back if he really wanted to. Kasperi Kapanen, I think you keep, and I think, honestly, probably, although Connor Brown's been good for them, and I think Jeff Skinner might
Connor
be
Connor Brown, I thought, was not good for them in the playoffs. I thought he kind of just disappeared.
After the first two rounds.
The Stanley Cup final.
After the first two rounds, yeah, you could argue that. I thought he was phenomenal, honestly, in the first two rounds. I don't know.
Oh, he was a non-factor in the Stanley Cup final. Non-factor.
None of the depth was for the Oilers, and I think a lot of that's
the issue. Their problem, though, and they don't have the capacity to make that bottom six better this year. I mean, they're gonna have to have some cap dumps, and they don't have a first or second round pick this year. They don't have a first round pick next year, so it's not like they're gonna be able to refill the prospect pool right away. They're not in a great spot right now. They were all in to win the Stanley Cup this year, and they didn't. You know, if they win the Cup, we're not talking about any of this.
Correct.
But they lost a second year in a row. They got, honestly, outside of those two games, they kind of got their butts kicked. I know they lost a game in overtime still, but still, game six, it looked like the Oilers just quit. It's just simply quit. And you can't put it all on the goaltending, because I don't think Stuart Skinner was that bad. It's just the defense was hanging them out to dry, and the Panthers are just that good. And that's one area where they have to get better is goaltending, because they simply don't have the assets right now to address it in free agency or make a trade for a goaltender, unless they're willing to trade Stuart Skinner and kind of like do a swap and throw in an extra pick to get maybe a better goalie. There's not a lot of great options, and teams don't really trade starting goalies very often.
And not only that, but Stuart Skinner's only making 2.6 a year. You're going to have to find a goalie making less than that if you want to gain some sort of cap space. And with them being up against the cap, like how we've mentioned 6 million times already, it's going to be hard to even trade Stuart Skinner for another goaltender. Like, genuinely. And like you said, I don't think Stuart Skinner was horrible in the Stanley Cup Finals. If people that actually watched the goddamn games could understand that the team in front of him was not helping him. McDavid and Draisaitl were held out to dry. And I kind of feel bad because everybody else didn't show up for the Oilers. Even Nugent Hopkins, granted, he was playing with an injury.
Yeah, he was playing with a broken hand.
But guess what? Barkov split open the middle of his hand twice.
But Barkov didn't have a ton of points either. The problem, the thing with the Panthers, though, the rest of the team was stepping up in wake of that.
Sam Reinhart had a grade 2 MCL sprain, and he was phenomenal. Although, I guess
everyone's playing hurt in the Stanley Cup Final. If you're, it's kind of shocking if you aren't hurt when you're playing in the Stanley Cup Final, to be honest with you. It's just a matter of who's going to step up more. And the Panthers got contributions from everybody on that roster. Mm-hmm. Up and down, they all... I give the Panthers a ton of credit because they play a very, very physical style of hockey. Very, very exhausting. They can wear on you, but they don't... They play as a one cohesive unit. Everyone knows their job, and they do their job, and they do not let up.
Oh, and more injury news. Matthew Tkachuk tore his abductor completely off the bone.
Yeah, I believe he did it in the Four Nations face-off. I think speculation was he did it when he got into that fight at the beginning of the game.
Yeah, with Hagel. And he also had a hernia on the same side, too. He wasn't sure if he was going to be ready for the playoffs. We all knew that his status was uncertain. But you can tell the first two and a half rounds, he was not looking good.
Well, he was great in the Stanley Cup final.
He was. Yeah. So, again, injuries is part of it. And before we move on to the rest of the news, I just want to say the Marchand and Jones trades by the Panthers might have been some of the greatest trades I've ever seen.
I mean, the whole Brandon Marchand thing is crazy because he even said it himself. He said, I should not be here. He literally said, I shouldn't be here.
Dude, it was a trade that was happening. Literally, the Panthers and the Bruins did not talk earlier that morning. The Panthers or... the Bruins, whoever called one another, called each other like an hour before the deadline was over.
Yeah, I think it was a situation where like Brad Marchand, I think, asked for a trade. I'm pretty sure, and he had a four no movement clause, and the only team he'd waive it for was Florida.
Yeah,
and so you kind of get what you. If I'm the Panthers and the Bruins are offering you Brad Marchand, you figure something out.
It's like, you know, here's the second round conditional pick for you. And now that's
any team would do that in a heartbeat. Other teams are probably pissed because like it's like, well, if you would have known he was available, we would have liked the opportunity to at least to talk to him.
Like, no, he wasn't available for anybody but Florida.
Yeah, and then Seth Jones remembered how to play hockey when he got to Florida as well.
It helps when you're winning. You don't just sit there when you're playing hockey and just have your mind wandering. You're actually locked the fuck in when you're not buried in Chicago.
Yeah,
see what it does for you.
I mean, Bill Zito makes really great trades. Like we said earlier, you know, they only have four drafted players on this team. The rest are either really smart free agent signings or really smart trades. They don't have a first round pick until 2028, but they're the back to back Stanley Cup champions, so I don't think they're worried about it.
Correct. And they're an oncoming dynasty. Fucking hell, man. I love what the Panthers have done. Quick time out before we get back to the episode, you beauties. As someone like myself who's in the fitness and needs a little bit of an extra boost before a lift, or maybe I need just a little bit of energy before my next hockey game, and even when doing pod stuff to bring you guys the best content possible, W always has me covered. Whether you need it to stay awake at work or need a little bit of a jolt to get you through the day, W will always provide you that spark you need. There's no sugar, no crash, no artificial flavors or artificial dyes, just flavored caffeine. 150 milligrams of caffeine in one serving, which is equivalent to 2 cups of coffee. Make sure to head over to W.GG and use code CFBPOD for 10% off any order. All right, let's move on to some news that is happening. We're starting to get into that time of the offseason where teams are starting to extend players that are on expiring deals, starting off with Ryan Donato, who signed a 4x4 extension with the Chicago Blackhawks. I was almost 100% certain that he was going to get $6 million if he hit the open market, but maybe Donato as an agent felt like this was the best place for him, not only for him to settle down, and really because before this, he hasn't been all over the place, but he's been struggling to find his footing in the NHL from time to time, and now he finally found his footing after a ridiculous career season in Chicago. Chicago keeps around at least some sort of a decent, stable piece around Connor Bedard, even though he is a center, give him some type of scoring support when he's not on the ice. And overall, I love this for both parties, if you ask me.
Yeah, I think this is a situation where Donato might have been able to get some more money in the market. But if you like where you are, you know you're a good fit, why not just keep it going? Because, you know, he has an opportunity in Chicago because, you know, they're not a great team. They don't have a ton of great depth. So he's going to be elevated in that roster. And he made the most out of it last year. He's their second-line center. And almost any other team in the league, he's not a second-line center. He's probably playing third-line or fourth-line. Yeah. In Chicago, he had an opportunity. He took advantage of it, and he cashed in. I think this is a good deal for both sides. You know, even if Donato takes a little bit of a step back, you know, and then let's say this Blackhawks end up drafting a center third overall, you know, for long term, you just slide him down to that 3C and he's still a great third line center.
Dude, putting up 60 points in 80 games, that was clearly your best. And I agree with you. I think even if he does take a step back a little bit, this is a very low risk deal for them. Mm-hmm. Even if he only produces 45 points, for example, as your second line center,
with the cap going up, $4 million is going to be like 2.5 soon.
Exactly. And with Donato at 29 years old, it's not like you're committing to a 29, 30-year-old long-term for the next 6, 7, 8 years, where his last 2 to 3 years, he might just not be a factor on your team. It might be a buyout candidate at one point. Again, I love this for the Blackhawks. And overall, this is the first step to the Blackhawks keeping and adding around Connor Bedard, because I think he needs a ton of help. They need to stop being like, let's go out and get vets for him and have the mentorship around it that clearly hasn't fucking worked. He's clearly fucking miserable in Chicago. Get some talent around him. It's starting with Donato. It's starting with the third overall pick and go from there.
I mean, there's rumors that the third overall pick might be available in a trade. We'll see. I expect Chicago to be a very active team in the draft and in free agency. They have a ton of money to work with. They are desperate for a first line winger to play with Connor Bedard. I'm assuming they're going to be in on the Mitch Marner sweepstakes. I'd be shocked if they don't make an offer to him or at least talk to him. Yeah, they're going to be big game hunting this summer for sure. They have the assets to do it. They have a ton of draft picks. They have two first, two seconds this year, two first, 3 seconds next year. So they have plenty of assets to go and make a big trade if they really wanted to. And they have plenty of cap space to sign pretty much whoever they want.
The next piece of news we have, Fabian Zetterlin. He ended up signing a 3x4.275 extension with the Ottawa Senators. Again, another very low-risk deal, 25-year-old who they traded for at the deadline. In 20 games, only had about 5-6 points for them. But he didn't get a ton of opportunity. He was more of, let's add some more young-ish players to the step and roll with it. And overall last season, I didn't even realize this. He played 84 games between San Jose and Ottawa. Just realize that, but he had 22 points for them. So, I mean, again, this is, I think, Zetterlin. He got not a lot of puck luck last season on both teams. I think this is the year where we could potentially see that 20-30 potential that I think he has in him.
Yeah, I think when Ottawa made this trade, I really liked the trade for Ottawa. I think Zetterlin's a good under-the-radar player. Mm-hmm. You know, he was playing good in San Jose when they traded him, considering how bad that team was. You know, 36 points in 64 games as a Shark. Comes into Ottawa, plays a little bit of a lesser role in the lineup because they're deeper than the Sharks. I think every team in the league was deeper than the Sharks last year, except for maybe the Blackhawks. But because they finished in last place. Yeah. So this is another, I think, a good fit for the team. I think he'll do more now that he knows his future's certain. You know, he's going to have a role card out in that team. Low risk. He's only 25 years old. So a 3-year deal, not a crazy cap hit. This is another really smart signing for I like this move a lot.
This is now we're going on to the next extension. This is the one that I really want to get into. Matthew Shane goes for $4x4.75 million extension with the Stars. And I feel like I'm going to be on this a little bit because, dude, the Dallas Stars, dude, you had $5 million for 5 or 6 players and you gave all of it to Matthew Shane. And now you have a Jamie Benn who's your goddamn captain, a UFA, Dadonoff, UFA, Blackwell, UFA, Maverick Bork, RFA, Mikael Granlin, UFA. Like,
I mean, we knew something like this was going to happen after they traded for Mika Rantanen and gave him that $12 million a year contract. Because you just look at their they have $800,000 in cap space or something insanely low like that right now. And Jimmy Benn's a UFA. I mean, I still don't see him signing anywhere but Dallas Stars. I think if he has to wait a little bit for them to figure out some cap stuff to sign, I think he'll be fine waiting. Dadonov was a player you'd like to have back, but you're not crying if you lose him. Mikael Granlin was also a pure rental at the deadline, but they don't really have. They're losing, four or five forwards and a couple of defensemen from their depth, and they don't have any money to sign anybody right now. And so, what this screams to me is there's two players I would target to trade for from the Stars right now, and the first player is Mason Marchment. $4.5 million cap hit. He's 30 years old. He's a good player. He's a good depth piece, but he's expendable right now. You know, it wouldn't be the end of the world if you lost him. He has good. It's not. It wouldn't be like a pure dump. You get some good, decent return. You probably get like a second round pick and a decent prospect for him. And then another one that I feel like we might hear a lot of rumors about this offseason is Jason Robertson, because he's a pending RFA going into next year. Last year it was dealed $7.75 million. No trade protection. He has a ton of value. You can get first round pick plus for him. I don't know if they move him, but I think there's going to be a lot of chatter this summer about whether they move him or not.
I've heard so many rumors about Jason Robertson, and I love the Mason Marchment one. By the way, I think he's very expendable. If you're Dallas, that's the first player I think you should move off of, especially at 34, making 4.5. But Jason Robertson, he's a guy that's going to give you the most assets. You can even bring in some younger 22 to 23, 24-year-olds that are on cheap deals. And now all of a sudden, you're just replacing one guy who's putting up 80 points with maybe.
And you're recuperating some draft assets as well.
Exactly. So that could be a thing for them too. And also, I don't know if you brought it up or not. You might have, about Matthew Dumba and Ilya Lyubushkin possibly, if the Stars would look to trade them.
Yeah, I think those two are expendable as well. It's just, I mean, they also have to pay Thomas Harley next season as well. Who knows how much money he's going to get. There's no way they would let Harley walk. I think they trade Robertson before they move on from Harley.
Yeah.
Just to have, you know, Harley and Heiskanen as your top pair, your top two defensemen is just insane. Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, Dumba. I don't know how much interest either of those players are getting. They might have to eat some salary on both of those players just because Lyubushkin, he's a very physical defenseman. He's 31 years old. He has 2 years left on his deal. And Dumba was kind of a risky signing, honestly, when they brought him in last year. He was on the Coyotes and the Lightning last year. Didn't really do much for them. And then he only had 10 points in 63 games with Dallas. He was playing bottom pair minutes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's also expendable. That I would see more of a cap dump where you're trading like a fourth round pick or like a third round pick just for a team to eat the salary cap.
I think Dumba is the much better choice to be traded, especially with the year left. And maybe you throw in, like you said, another draft pick to just, here's all of his salary, here's an extra draft pick for value, and give us back like a sixth round pick. Like, I just get rid of him. I don't care what I get back, to be honest with you.
I mean, I could see like a team like San Jose taking up an offer like that because they just need any kind of veteran players. I think having a veteran defenseman like that in the room would be good for that team. And then they also get another draft pick. And, you know, for a rebuilding team, you get money, you get a player that will actually contribute to your team, and you get a free draft pick just for eating the cap because you have a ton of cap space. They have $53 million cap space this offseason, so they have money to do literally whatever they want. So I think they could be getting a lot of calls this summer from teams for trying to facilitate trades or cap dumps so they can go sign other players. But Dallas has really worked themselves into the corner. There's one thing the Stars should feel for good about, though, is they do have one of the best general managers in the league, one of the better ones. He might be in the Hockey Hall of Fame already. If he's not, he's going to be. Jim Neal's great. He's one of the best. I think he's a top three GM in the NHL right now, just the way he's built that roster year after year after year. He's just a great drafter, makes smart trades, great free agent signings. So if anyone's going to figure it out, it's him. I will give him that.
I'm going to ask you this now about Jason Robertson, circling back to him. By training camp, which would be the second week of September, it's first or second week of September or so, is Jason Robertson a Dallas Star, or are we watching him suit up in a different uni?
I think it's more likely they trade him than they don't.
More likely they trade him than they don't. That's...
That's it depends if they can. Yeah, it depends, because I'm sure they'd love to keep him. In a perfect world, you want ever give up a player like that. You know, I know he was hurt for most of the playoffs. He finally looked like himself, probably a little too late in the conference final against the Oilers, where he was one of the only players that could score for them. But you know, just at that cap hit, he's going to be a pending RFA. They can't afford to sign him to an extension. Mm-hmm. They simply can't. Get the value for him while you can. He's an RFA, so if you could trade him to a team and then they can extend him, like that adds even more value to it. Because if you can trade him to, like, let's say a team, like, I'm just picking a team off the top of my head, like, let's say, like, I don't know, like Calgary, figure something out to get him on the team, and then they can give him an 8-year extension right away. I think another team that could be very interesting is the Buffalo Sabres. Mm-hmm. They have the assets to trade for him. They need a goal scorer, and they can also afford to pay him. There's going to be a few teams in that situation where they can afford, they'd love the opportunity to give him an 8-year extension.
Yeah, I think I'm on that boat of probably going to be traded. And it's not because that they might not necessarily want to, but especially when you commit long-term to a player like Mikko Rantanen and give him $12 million, the second that happened, people knew this conversation was going to come up. Now we're here, and now they're in cap hell. They can't afford to pay him. They have Thomas Harley, who the contract is up.
They have the least amount of cap space now going into the summer than any other team in the league.
Correct. By far. I think it's by far, at least.
By at least $1 million.
Yeah, by at least.
I mean, yeah, there's a few, like Tampa, Colorado, Edmonton, like they're all pretty tight against the cap. But yeah, I believe Dallas is the only one like less than $1 million away from the salary cap.
Last but not least piece of news here on a very busy beginning of the week. A trade happened. Another trade happened. You have Nashville acquiring Eric Halla from the New Jersey Devils, who end up acquiring Jeremy Hanzel and a 2024 fourth round pick. Again, we all agree on this. Pure cap dump. This was strictly to get rid of Eric Halla's contract and money, and they don't retain anything. They free up three.
It's also not a bad return for a cap dump.
No, it's not.
I mean, Eric Halla will still play. Like, it's not like he's washed or anything. At this point in his career, he's like a third, fourth liner guy. He's a good penalty killer. But, you know, he's 34 years old. He's been on a downward trajectory the last few years. You get a fourth round pick in an AHL player just to move on from the contract. I think this is something the Devils needed to do because they need to start thinking about money now, because they have some players coming up that they're going to get a decent chunk of change. So
what the? I'm sorry. I'm looking at their cap wages right now, and they have, after this season, so going into next summer, they only have seven guys, not including Saros. They have seven skaters under contract, and that's it. Barry Trotz has a chance to overhaul this roster and make it a competitive team again. And there's only guys under contract after the 25.
You're talking about the Predators? Season.
Predators, yeah. Were you talking about
the Devils? Oh, yeah, yeah. The only guys they have locked up turn are, like, probably the worst contracts on the team. Yeah, for that middle six and the defensive core, yeah, you completely overhaul that.
I do think, though, that Eric Hall is going to be an interesting add to the Devil. Not the Devils. Jesus fucking Christ. Sorry. I didn't mean to use his name in vain. But they have a very interesting acquisition with Eric Hall because he's a veteran. And I felt like the Predators' younger players at times really struggled in the middle six and the bottom six of this team this season. And of course, it doesn't help when some of your older stars and some of the guys that you brought in underperformed as well. It also doesn't help when you have younger guys and some other vets in the bottom six that just didn't produce. And Eric Halla, who is 34 years old, making only, 3.15 for the next season, then he's a UFA. Again, I don't mind this for the Predators. I think it's going to be another thing where this is just a cap dump for the Devils. The Predators need some extra depth, help. And overall, I think it's honestly probably more of a win for the Devils, if you ask me.
I mean, the Predators needed the center pretty badly. I still think they draft a center in the first round. Can't pass up with the top five pick picking a center. But, yeah, the Predators, it helps them a little bit now. I mean, you only give up a fourth-round pick and essentially the AHL player. We'll see if he does anything. And I'm not trying to be a dick and say that he sucks. But
yeah.
I've never heard of Jeremy Hanzel before, and he's never played an NHL game. He was drafted in 2023, so, I mean, he's only a couple of years ago, but he played the Atlanta Gladiators. Is that even AHL?
That's I believe that's ECHL.
Yeah, so, yeah, we'll see if he ever makes it to the big show. But for now, you know, New Jersey's in an interesting spot as well, where they also have a lot of players. The only guy they have two forwards locked up long term, and then, you know, Nico Hischier is going to need to get extended after this season, and then Luke Hughes is an RFA. I'm assuming they try just to get an 8-year deal done with him just to not worry about it. And then Simon Nemec also in a year is coming up on his RFA status.
Assuming bridge.
That one I see more of a bridge status, but unless he goes crazy next year. But Luke Hughes, like, you just try to get that done as soon as you can. Just 8-year deals. Like, you're going to play with your brother for your whole career. Just sign the fucking contract, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I agree. They got to save some money for when they trade for Quinn Hughes.
Yeah. And speaking of Dawson Mercer, you will be one of the main pieces with Simone Nemec in that trade, by the way. So they don't have to worry about signing you when you're an RFA and arbitration eligible.
That's the Canucks problem, right?
Yeah, it is. But overall for the Devils, before we end things here, is they're probably freeing up cap space because I think they're going to sign Luke Hughes to an 8-year deal. I think that's what's going to happen. And
well, it's not like they were like dying for cap space this season. I mean, they have like $20 million of cap space right now, like after that trade. So they still have money to spend. But I mean, I can't see Luke Hughes getting more than $8 million a year.
No, if he gets an 8x8, I think that's a win for both parties too. Especially,
yeah, I think so too. Yeah.
If let's say they do that, he's 29 years old in the middle of his prime. He can still get more money, especially with the cap going up. So I don't think it's a bad idea.
Yeah, I think he'll get like a similar contract to like Owen Power and like Jake Sanderson did, like both coming off their ELC. They just signed the long-term deal right away. That's kind of where I see his contract going.
I am interested to see what Nico Hischier gets when his contract is up in a couple years too. That's going to be interesting.
Yeah, the Devils are going to be an interesting team the next few years.
Yeah. That's going to end it for today's episode. If you guys enjoy all of our content, all of our socials are down below, as well as the subscribe button. Check us out down on Instagram and all of our socials as well. And we'll see you guys in our next episode.